TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Professor Jeffrey Sachs, Why the West Hates Russia. The Biden administration authorized Ukraine to use American weapons to attack inside Russia. How close did we come to nuclear war? Once a week, Judge Andrew Napolitano interviews the same group of progressive commentators on war and current affairs. On June 4, 2024, he spoke to Columbia University professor Jeffrey Sachs. Sachs is an American economist and public policy analyst. He's known for his work on sustainable economics and the fight to end climate change and poverty. He has worked as an economic advisor to governments in Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. Here's Judge Andrew Napolitano.
Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Tuesday, June 4th, 2024. Professor Jeffrey Sachs joins us now. Professor Sachs, a pleasure, my dear friend. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
Of course.
We have a lot to talk about with the Biden administration authorizing the Ukrainians to use offensive American weaponry to attack sites inside Russia, and the Biden administration claiming that the Israelis have offered a peace plan for Gaza, which some in the Israeli government deny. How perilous, to use your word, is the determination by Western leaders, including President Biden, to authorize the use of their own offensive weaponry to strike targets inside Russia? Stated differently, is this perilous to the freedom and security of those of us in the mainland United States of America?
Well, first of all, one thing that we have definitely seen is a remarkable amount of freelancing of Western leaders, each one talking out of turn, inconsistently, sometimes absolutely recklessly and dangerously. We have Baltic state leaders saying Russia must be destroyed or Russia must be dismembered. We have the UK political class piping off in a similarly reckless manner. We have President Macron saying, well, we're sending troops, period, and apparently have done so. We have the Germans in an open debate where and Germany has said, yes, now we give clearance to Ukraine to use our weapons. We have incoherence of our own side. Blinken says one thing that one day, the White House clarifies the next day. This is absolute reckless freelancing in an extremely dangerous environment, and where different countries seem to operate on different principles in our so-called alliance. I personally find the UK utterly irresponsible in general, because they talk like the 19th century British Empire and get everyone else into hotter water as a result of that. France's remarks, President Macron's remarks, that is, in recent weeks have been highly irresponsible. Zelensky is a danger to the world, in my view, because, of course, what does Zelensky want? He wants a full-fledged war between NATO and Russia, because if it's a war between Ukraine and Russia, Ukraine loses. So he's trying to pull NATO into a full war. I profoundly resent that on behalf of all of our children and grandchildren around the world. We need to stay away from that kind of idea. This is totally irresponsible, but this is what is actually happening. So Biden barely leads. He doesn't speak to the American people. He speaks to donors, we hear stray remarks, and we have this general cacophony right now among so-called allied leaders, one more reckless than the next. And people should understand this is extremely dangerous. There was the strike by Ukraine, presumably, maybe with U.S. targeting, maybe with British targeting. We don't know because they lie on everything. Against the two early warning nuclear attack radar systems inside Russia. And I got very worried emails by American top experts outside of the government that, my God, this is as reckless and dangerous as can be. Please share that with the White House. Please share that with people you know, which I did. Mm. But this is the situation right now. And we have extremely weak leadership, very unstable politics in our country, a very unpredictable electoral period ahead, and a hot war. And a lot of people not making much sense.
I'm going to play a clip from Foreign Minister Lavrov.
We have shown that we will not put up with this, and that we will not allow Ukraine to be used as a direct threat to our security, as an instrument for the destruction of everything Russian on historical Russian lands. But as always happens, if they wake up the Russian bear, then our people have united like never before. These are not empty words. The Nazi regime continues to use Western weapons to attack civilian targets, towns, and cities. I assure you that they will not be able to cross this line unnoticed.
Does the West take that seriously? Stated differently, do they think President Putin and Foreign Minister Lavrov bluff?
This is not a bluff. This is serious concern. Do they take it seriously? I don't know. Should they take it seriously? Absolutely. This is not wild speech. This is absolutely saying, look at this current situation. Your weaponry is hitting us. We are in an environment of absolute reckless absence of diplomacy, because another part of what Minister Lavrov repeats and what President Putin repeats is, we are open for negotiation, but it has to be meaningful negotiation with the United States of America. This is a U.S.-led alliance that's being pulled around by Ukraine, Ukrainian leaders who have their own agenda, by Baltic leaders who have their own agenda. This is not America taking care of an extraordinarily dangerous situation. And the language that is used in the West is utterly intemperate and irresponsible. We must destroy Russia. These are words being used by Western leaders. That's war talk. That's World War III talk. We don't want that. Where is President Biden? Where is that address to the American people? Where is that clear statement? We are staying away from such dangers. We understand this. Where is the restraint within the U.S. military alliance so that other leaders don't manipulate the United States for their purposes or get us into trouble that we should not be in and don't want to be in? I don't see it happening right now. I don't see that most basic responsibility at this moment. What I see is three fulminant crises with the U.S. and Russia, with the Middle East, and with China, not one of which is being properly managed.
Is your understanding of the availability of nuclear weapons such that it is not, that you believe it is not unrealistic that if the Russians fear a serious threat, they might resort to them?
I can't believe that in June 2024, every day we're talking about nuclear war. Are we out of our minds?
It's terrifying.
And by the way, if you look at one of these articles and then you look at the comment section, which I mistakenly do all too often, say of the Financial Times, where there's an article where the Russians say that this is taking us closer to nuclear war, then the comment section almost entirely is, oh, don't worry about that bluff. That's fake. We're not going to be blackmailed. And all this mindless, tough, stupid talk. And if someone says, well, maybe we should be worried about it because nuclear war could end everything, then the next comment is, oh, you're a Putin troll. You're a Russian troll. I don't recall an environment like this in my life. And I don't recall a crisis moment like this since the Cuban Missile Crisis. But then the leaders were more circumspect. And that's what actually kept us from complete annihilation. Now we don't have any circumspection. We have complete freelancing. We have open discussion. Now, what's nuclear war among friends? Right. So the whole environment of this is mind-boggling. I'm not saying I don't know. Of course, nobody knows. Is nuclear war imminent? God help us. But what kind of language and thought processes are we using to even have a question like that even remotely phrased? But that is the truth, that this has become a normalized discussion. The president needs to step up and say, no, it's not going to happen because we are engaged in diplomacy. This will not get out of control, and we will find a peaceful end to this conflict. That's what a president of the United States needs to do. This is not complicated. This is about saving the world.
Why does the West hate Russia?
I'll tell you, I went back to take a look at the end of the Soviet Union in December 1991. Our defense secretary at the time, Dick Cheney, said, okay, they don't want communism anymore. Maybe Russia should be dismembered too. Why stop at the Soviet Union? The idea was already there. It wasn't about this communism or non-communism. It was about Russia. He was defense secretary. That started in 1992. And in 1997, as I was reviewing yesterday, Zbigniew Brzezinski, in his foreign affairs article, A Strategy for Eurasia, says, yeah, Russia should be a decentralized country. There should be a European Russia, a Siberian Russia, a Far East Russia, as a kind of confederation. What are we doing planning the dismemberment or the dissolution or the turn to a confederation of Russia? This is just blatant American arrogance, but extraordinarily dangerous. And it has played out now over 32 years with this NATO enlargement, with we don't hear Russia, with regime change operations, with the U.S. support for insurgencies along Russia's borders, also going back, by the way, to 1979, 1980, when President Jimmy Carter assigned the CIA to work with jihadists, Islamic fighters, to fight in Afghanistan with Brzezinski's idea of entrapping the Soviet Union into a war in Afghanistan. And then that kind of jihadist activity became part of America's secret arsenal, extraordinarily dangerous, leaving in its wake wars and instability all across Russia's borderlands. And then the NATO push and the NATO enlargement and the coup in February 2014 and the placement of U.S. missiles near Russia's borders after unilaterally abandoning the anti-ballistic missile treaty. and then unilaterally abandoning the Intermediate Nuclear Force Treaty under Trump. If you just keep doing this, that we call the shots, we do what we want, we don't listen, oh, that's a bluff, we're going to have a really bad accident. That's the problem.
All right. Well, we know, you know, you've told us many times, Colonel McGregor has told us, Ritter, Johnson, McGovern, and the others, that Putin doesn't bluff. And when they make a threat, they carry out on it. But I need to...
And just to understand, because these are not offensive threats. These are responding to events. Correct. That's important to understand. We know that one of the greatest concerns of Russia since 2002 was that George W. Bush Jr. pulled the U.S. unilaterally out of the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, which was one of the stabilizing factors to prevent nuclear war. And the Russians were aghast at that. This was also in the context of NATO enlargement, because 2 years after that, seven more countries joined NATO around Russia's border: Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Bulgaria, Romania, Slovakia, and Slovenia in 2004. Then the United States started putting in Aegis missile systems, first into Poland, then into Romania. The Russians are saying, you're not going to talk to us about that? How do we even know what's in those missile silos? We don't know, but it's a few minutes from Moscow. And then we know now, because it was revealed just very, very recently, that in December 2021, the United States said, well, we will not deploy missiles in Ukraine. And this was supposedly a commitment from Biden to Putin directly. And then ostensibly what we've heard reported was that in January 2022, Secretary Blinken said to Lavrov, no, that's not a hard agreement. We're not going to agree on anything like that. We don't know. We're watching from the outside the pantomime on the screen without knowing what is being said behind the scenes. But the fact that these things are discussed this way, not denied, no report from the United States government, not any kind of stabilizing words from Blinken or from Biden, is completely alarming. It's as if we're just adrift.
Right. I want to segue over to Israel and Gaza.
Yeah, absolutely. The same incredible situation.
Well, this proposal that the president has offered, which he claims came from the Israelis, but which significant parts of the Israeli government are doubting and denying, is this again for domestic American politics, or is this a realistic way of dialing back significantly the slaughter that's going on in Gaza?
It's pathetic. I don't know whether it's for domestic politics or whether it is Biden claiming things that he doesn't have in hand. But what we do know is that the intermediaries in the negotiations between Israel and Hamas had put forward a ceasefire plan several weeks ago. Hamas accepted it. Israel rejected it. Our rhetoric, because it's all propaganda morning till night in our country, is that Hamas rejected it. Okay? Then the war continues, Israel enters into Rafah. Now we have essentially the same thing being floated again by President Biden, calling it Israel's plan. Well, that's absurd, because at least two members of the coalition, Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, immediately said, no way, this isn't the government's plan, immediately after Biden said it was Israel's plan. Then we have a spokesman from Netanyahu's office saying, well, it's terrible, but we support it. Then we have Netanyahu saying, no, we don't support it. We say not a permanent ceasefire, but 6 weeks because our mission to destroy Hamas is unchanged. So what is Biden talking about, for God's sake? This is the Israel plan? Come on.
Well, what do you see happening in Gaza? More slaughter? Israel attacking Hezbollah? The United States getting involved? Iran and Turkey getting involved? Where is this going to go?
Look, the United States could stop this immediately. It just has to say this war is over. Not this is Israel's proposal. This war is over.
Well, you know that Joe Biden won't do that for his own internal reasons.
Yeah, his own internal reasons are going to lead to his defeat, and we may get worse with Trump. But Biden is completely bleeding support of people who would normally vote for Democratic candidate for president. So this isn't for his own internal reasons. This is for his weakness as president and the weakness of his team. And the fact of the matter is there was an important meeting in Bahrain in mid-May of the Arab League, which made a declaration, which everyone should look on, which said, we, the Arab countries, are ready for peace in this region based on the two-state solution, a state of Palestine living peacefully aside a state of Israel. And that is also subscribed to by Iran, by the way, and by the Islamic countries in the OIC. And peace is waiting there to be achieved. But this would depend on Biden being able to do what an Eisenhower would do, or what a John Kennedy would do, or what other presidents that had capacity in this area would do. And that would be to lead. And of course, he doesn't yet. We are adrift, and we are adrift at an extremely dangerous moment.
You may have heard this, but I want to play it again. It's the Saudi foreign minister talking about Israel doesn't get to decide whether or not there's a two-state solution.
Israel doesn't get to decide whether or not the Palestinians have a right to self-determination. This is something that is enshrined in the United Nations Charter. It is something that is enshrined into international law. It is also a founding principle of the United Nations decision to found Israel. So, yeah. You know, it is absolutely necessary that Israel accepts that it cannot exist without the existence of a Palestinian that its security is served by building a Palestinian state. So we hope sincerely that the leaders in Israel will realize that it is in their interest to work with the international community, not just to strengthen the Palestinian Authority, but to finally establish a Palestinian state along the 1967 borders, as everybody understands is the right thing to do.
I can't imagine anybody in the Netanyahu government agrees with any of that.
Well, but the point is
except for the accurate recitation of history.
Yeah, the point is that the foreign minister is very correctly, properly, eloquently stated what 191 countries believe. Right. That is out of the 193 in the UN. 191 believe that the only way to peace is two states living side by side. And Israel is dead set against it. And the United States is too weak to make peace under this administration. So what he said was absolutely correct. There's a backstory to his statement there on May 27th that should be understood. And that is that it has been the fervent hope of two administrations, Trump and Biden, that Israel could get its way, no Palestinian state, and have normal relations with Saudi Arabia, because the U.S. would kind of bribe the Saudis through an F-35 deal, through a defense agreement, maybe provision of some nuclear technology, and that would get the Saudis to normalize relations with Israel. And this is what Kushner worked on during the Trump period. This is what Blinken and Hochstein, another so-called negotiator of the U.S., work on. And what the foreign minister of Saudi Arabia is saying is no, no, stop it. Don't keep coming to us to think we're going to walk away from the Palestinian people. They're not going to. And the whole Arab League is saying clearly, peace with Israel? Yes, peace with the state of Palestine. It's so clear. So we have one country with one very weak president and one extremely weak foreign policy team blocking peace in the Middle East. If he wanted to get elected, make peace. He's got the whole Arab League on side for peace. He's got the Organization of Islamic Cooperation on side for peace. He's got the whole United Nations on side for peace. But what are we doing? No, no. We're siding with one other country to block peace. It's just absolutely unimaginable how uncreative, naive, weak, and deadly this failed diplomacy is.
Professor Sachs, thank you for your analysis and thanks for your passion. As always, I know we were across the board in this. We didn't get to China. And I know you want to talk about that. We will when you're on with us.
Actually, if you have one more minute, just to make an added point that involves China, if it's okay with you.
Yes.
Good. You know, after the Bahrain meeting and the Arab declaration, things didn't stand still. The King of Bahrain went to say, let's now have an international conference to create the two-state solution. Where did he fly? Did he fly to Washington? No. Where did he fly?
Beijing.
First to Moscow. Very interesting. He had a long talk with President Putin, who said, yes, we support the two-state solution. Then where did he fly? Yes, to Beijing. Because this is reality. Right. And are we living in a dream world or are we living in the real world?
Where did he not fly to? Washington.
That is the point.
Thank you, Jeff, for all these fascinating points tied together in such a compelling way. Look forward to seeing you next week. All the best.
See you next week.
Thank you.
That's Judge Andrew Napolitano thanking Professor Jeffrey Sachs. Sachs is an American economist, public policy analyst, and professor at Columbia University. He works with the United Nations as president of the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network. Judge Andrew Napolitano sat on the New Jersey bench from 1987 to 1995. He was a Fox News senior judicial analyst. You can find the full 35-minute video of this conversation on YouTube under Judging Freedom. That's a daily discussion of news from a libertarian perspective by Judge Andrew Napolitano. Jeffrey Sachs, Why the West Hates Russia, was streamed live on June 4, 2024. My name is Maria Glurden. Thank you for listening.